Well, I'm honored and humbled to stand before you at any time to preach the gospel. An imperfect man with a perfect message, but I'm certainly honored to stand before you in this hour and with my son here. We don't do much back and forth in public because we're both tender-hearted as two girls, but...
wait a minute.
But... I appreciate. Y'all can post that one on your Twitter thing. But I'm thankful for what Wayne said. I wouldn't trade anything. Wouldn't take all the money that you could pile up in this room for the life that we've had, Kathy and myself with our kids and the work that they did. They were outstanding at home and involved in the work of the church. We did our best to teach them that church. Working for the Lord in the kingdom was not a drudgery or a duty. It was not. It was a lovely thing, and it was something that we loved and delighted in doing. And I'm more than grateful for his life and what he does, and the man that he is. And I was telling somebody at lunch, Brother Dave, that his work ethics are, ever since he was 17 years old and started school of preaching, his work ethics have been just over the top always, and they still are. And so I'm very proud of him and Channa Kay, and I'm proud that I get the opportunity to speak, come out here and watch him do his thing, but I'm glad I get to speak. It's not likely that a church will grow or decline for just one reason alone. Always it takes a combination of factors to cause a church to grow, and it takes a combination of factors to cause a church to decline. The simplest idea of visitation and church growth is if there are no visitors, there's no growth. If you don't have visitors or if you don't visit, there will be no growth. The most influential thing in that area is friendship. Striking up a friendship, finding common ground with someone, being able to gain their trust, not in a deceitful way, but an honest way, and then to be able to spend some time with them and then have the opportunity tactfully and hopefully wisely to ask them about their situation or find out their situation, and then to be able to teach them the gospel. I looked up some statistics along this line to start with, and I found some things that humbled me, and I'd stand before you as a man who is not the I don't think I'm in either one of those groups that Wayne said. I think I fail more than I succeed in this area, and I don't say that braggingly. I just know that I could do better, and having been given this subject and having to stand and preach it, that I will do better when I go home. I can guarantee you that. But I found this statistic, that the healthiest ratio for evangelism is 50% of new members should be added by conversion for a congregation. Don't know, if that plays out in every situation, but what he means is that the ratio should be from January 1st of this year to January 1st of next year, if you take a poll on how many people were added to the Lord's church, 50% of those folks should be by way of conversion. That's a healthy ratio. Among growing churches, 58% of them have a regular evangelistic training program, and 75% of them have weekly visitation. To say that we've tried several different programs. At HOMA, we tried several programs. At Nesbitt, we tried several programs. At New Hope, we've tried programs, trying to get people involved, trying to get things done. Sometimes they work for a while. Sometimes they never got off the ground. Sometimes they lasted for a long time. But it's not possible for that to work if the members don't get behind it. And it's not feasible if they don't see the leaders involved in doing that. And so if you're here as an elder or a preacher, then I would say to you, as I say to me in both of those roles, that we need to set the tone. We need to set the example. We need to take the lead and bring them with us, and we will do better in that area. Statistics also show that church guests are contacted within 36 hours after their visit have a 60% chance of returning. Those contacted by the end of the week have 15% coming back. No contact at all, guess what the percentage is? Pretty close, yes, sir. It's close enough to zero that it's scary, yes, sir. I'm going to go through some principles here, and then we're going to get into the very practical side of things. And if you know me, that's all that I am. Why do we not do more visiting? We're going to start on the negative and go to the positive. Number one, a lot of Christians have no sense of urgency to reach the lost people. A lot of members have no sense of what, and we started the first of this year with the theme on January, first Sunday in January was, it's time to grow up, and it's time to go to work, and it's time to understand who we are. And that sense of urgency, I try to express that every week when I preach to myself and then to the members. But many church members don't have any. We live in a world, a country that's where we can get what we want very quickly. We now can get Amazon overnight shipping. We can get FedEx overnight. We can get Walmart 2-day shipping. I mean, whatever we want, we can get. And so there's no. We live in a comfortable country for a large degree. And so that translates sometimes into me and you relaxing on the sense of urgency. I mean, we have a country, we have an economy, we have a military, we feel safe. And so we don't sometimes see and realize that every minute that we live, there will be thousands of people going into eternity not prepared to meet God, or at least not prepared to go to heaven. So we need somehow to get that sense. We're going to talk about how to do that. Number two, many church members and Christians do not befriend and spend time with lost people.
That's right.
We somehow have, and there's nothing wrong, Jesus had his inner circle. But the Bible also says that he ate with sinners and publicans.
That's right.
He didn't go to the bars with them and drink with them. He didn't go to other things with them and partake with them. But at the same time, he had contact. I remember I knew Johnny Ramsey just at a distance, and he wouldn't have ever known who I was personally. But I read an article he wrote years ago, and he said, I'm hearing articles, I'm hearing preachers say, tack, tack, tack. He said, I think we need more contact. He said, tack's important, contact's more important. We have to get out there where they are. We have to spend time with them. But we don't have to partake with them. But when we spend time with them, sometimes we're criticized for that. Sometimes people look at us a little differently. Sometimes we wonder, why is he spending time with them? Well, didn't the Pharisees do Jesus that way? Didn't they do the disciples that way? Well, and certainly Jesus never did anything wrong, and yet people thought bad of him. So we don't have a lot of hope that they're not going to feel bad about us. But we need to spend time with them. Quite honestly, many church members are just simply apathetic and lazy. And they don't want to be inconvenienced. Many preachers are the same way. Many elders are the same way. You know, we build a building, and there's the building, and they'll come if they want to. They know where we are. We are known sometimes for what we're against than what we're for. Now, you're looking at a fellow who believes in standing for the truth and calling it like it is. But if that's all I'm ever known for is what I stand against, I'm not going to reach very many people with that attitude. Do we have to make a stand? Absolutely. We can't compromise truth. But do we have to be compassionate and concerned about those people who are lost? Absolutely, we have to do that. Some churches have the attitude, you come to the services rather than we go to their homes. You know, like I said, we have a building. They know where we are. I've heard members say that. Well, they know where we are if they need us. Well, they're not probably going to come knocking on. About 3.5 years ago, we had a man by the name of Anthony Dugas who walked into the services on a Sunday morning. And I introduced myself to him, and I said, you visiting? And he said, I'm looking for the true church. And I said, you're fixing to sit right in amongst the members of it. And he said, I've been looking for 6 years for the true church. That man has grown more in 3.5 years than a lot of members have grown in 30.5 years. Because he was looking for that. Now, but you don't find many Anthony Dugas in this world anymore. They go out looking. We need to go looking for them. Many church members think that that's just the role of the elders and the preacher. One of the works that I had, when I moved there, wasn't Homa, moved there and tried to get them to engage in visitation, engage in going to visit people. And this lady told me, I don't have time to do that. That's why we hired you. I pay you to do my visiting. And that was her verbatim quote. That was her attitude. I said, no, ma'am, you can't pay me to do your visiting. I said, I have enough to do on my own. I said, I can't visit for you. I said, maybe I realize I have a greater responsibility than you do because I'm supported, but at the same time, that doesn't relieve you of your responsibility. In too many cases today, it's more about getting my needs met in the church than reaching the lost. Do we need to meet the needs of the brethren? Well, yes, we need to try to do that. But what's the ultimate goal? What's the fundamental foundation goal of the church? To evangelize the world. But sometimes some members think that it's all about them, it's all they're self-centered, and they're not worried about the folks on the outside. They worry about getting everything that they need met. We are sometimes, number 8, in a retreat mode, because culture has become more worldly and unbiblical. Now, I love the church in Houma, Louisiana. I love the church at Hollywood Road. I've loved it from day one. I love it just probably more now than I did when I moved there. But we are an hour's distance of driving to the French Quarter New Orleans. And so the Mardi Gras spirit persists 24/7 down there. It's a very ungodly society because you go in anybody's private, like I told the elders class, you go in anybody's private restaurant or business, and 9/10 of them have a door that says you have to be 21 to go in there. And there's a casino, some type of gambling facility back there. Drinking. I mean, I moved there and we drove by this place and it had a drive-in daiquiri place. And then they built a new one. I thought they were building a nice little restaurant. I don't think about a hamburger place and milkshakes. And then next they put the sign up, drive-in daiquiris, drive-through daiquiris. And so I asked, is it wrong to drink down here? And they said, yes. I said, but you can drive through a drive-through line, never get out of your car, and pick up a drink. Yes. I said, do they ever stop you for drinking? Well, not usually unless you have a wreck. I said, but if they stop you, they put there's a little piece of paper on top of the straw. And if that piece of paper is on the straw, that indicates to the policeman that you hadn't been drinking. I said, so you couldn't carry an extra straw with you? And they said, oh, yeah, you can do that. But that's the culture around. And I know it's not just there, but it's there. It permeates. And it permeates into the church when they see it all the time. I mean, immodest dress. San Marcos has a problem with that culturally. We have a problem with that. I suppose every community has a problem with that. So because of that, sometimes Christians retreat into a safe corner, they think, and they don't want to get out there where that is. Well, we don't want to participate with them, but again, we have to go out there where they are. Churches sometimes have lost their focus on making disciples who will be equipped and motivated to reach the lost. Sometimes we think that our mission is to pay the bills. If we got the building paid for, we got the building cleaned, and everything's taken care of, and you come in and the air conditioner works and the heater works and everything like that, We come in, we have a good worship service, and we leave, and some members think, well, we're doing great. That's what it's all about. Well, worshiping, absolutely, that's what it's about. But reaching out outside those walls is what it's about more as much. Some Christians don't want to teach the truth of the gospel for fear that they will offend other people. Political correctness is too commonplace in the Lord's church anymore. We don't want to say something that will run them off or offend them. Again, that has a lot to do with how you say it. You know, I could walk up to Kathy and say, I love you. Well, she knows I'd be playing with if I did that. But I could mean it, that attitude, and I said the right words, but I didn't say it with the right attitude. But on the other hand, we have to stand against. And the political correctness has no place in the Lord's church. Being nice and gentle and loving and pleasant has, but not political correctness. If it needs to be said, it needs to be said. Sometimes churches have, and members have, far too many activities, and they're just too busy to get involved with what needs to be done to reach the lost. So those are a few things on the negative side. Jesus said in John 4 and verse 35 to his disciples, do not say 4 months more and then the harvest. I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest. So having that mindset and that backdrop for the next section we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about going visiting. We're going to talk about who we need to visit and then how we need to go about that. First, the church guest, the one who visits. Hollywood Road is a very friendly congregation. It'd be very rare, if a visitor walked in and sat down and got up and left after services and nobody spoke to him. I mean, it would be rarer than rare. Wedding garment and those matters. Jesus says in Matthew 22:9, go to the street corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find. So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, both good and bad, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. Another great attribute of the church at Hollywood Road is that it's the only congregation of the Lord's people in town. Therefore, everybody goes to the same congregation. There's not this church over there and this church. And I'm talking about churches of Christ. There's only one. So it doesn't matter if you're a female or a male. It doesn't matter what color your skin is. It doesn't matter what your social standing is. Everybody goes to the same one. I know places where that's a difficulty of going out and inviting the community. In fact, the very first work we had 32 years ago, that's the reason we left. Was because we were trying to implement a door knocking, and basically we got crucified because we were going to go on the wrong side of town and invite people to come to services, according to what they said. And I didn't want this boy and his sister growing up in that kind of prejudiced, hatred attitude. So we lost all our money that we'd put in the house. We'd been saving for about 10 years, but it was worth not complaining. God's blessed me. To get them out and get us out of that attitude. Because we need to go out into the byways and the highways and invite people in. If they come, and that's another great thing. Somebody can walk in who's got raggedy clothes on and be dirty, and you don't see Christians over here in the corner in Hollywood Road like this. You'll see people going up to them and seeing if there's something they can do for them. Now, that was there before I got there. I love that. I love that about the people. The people are genuine and real. Church guests are people that we need to visit. We need to remember that 36-hour time, if we get to them 36 hours after they get there, there's a greater possibility. Contact them, somehow go visit them. And I know we live in a different world than we used to live in as far as going up and just knocking on somebody's door. A lot of people don't like you to do that. They don't like you coming unannounced. And if you call somebody, you know the answer to most of those phone calls, don't you? I'm busy tonight. I'm busy tomorrow night. So sometimes you just have to step on out there and do it. And but anyway, the church gifts. Number two, inactive members. James said, "My brothers, if one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring him back, remember this. Whoever turns a sinner from the error of his way will save him from death and cover a multitude of sins." Again, that comes with having fellowship with that person and communication with that person and some type of relationship with that person. If they've been gone from the church 10 or 15 years and then you start trying to go get them, well, they're going to say, "You didn't care 10 years ago. Why are you coming now?" Should we go 10 years from now? Yes, but we should have gone, you know, 10 days after they weren't there or 10 or whatever. But we need, that's that when we start thinking about who we can visit, well, we can visit guests. And back up just a second. Sometimes in a congregation, people are so, and I know they love to be with each other in the congregation, and they get to see each other at worship services, Bible classes. But sometimes we fellowship, we hang around with each other, the ones that we like, and sometimes even though we went over and introduced ourselves to that guest, we let that guest walk right out the door, and we're sitting here talking about what we're going to eat or what we're going to do tomorrow night. Is there anything wrong with eating? And no, but that guest needs people around them, not just introducing, but to be there with them. And we sometimes members can't wait for the end in amen to be said, so they run out the door and go home. I mean, for whatever the reason. That's not a healthy situation for any congregation to be in either. Even if there are no visitors, the brethren need encouraging. So we need to think about those things in doing that. Inactive members, guests. And then I found this friends. We need friends. Now, what do you think? I mean, that's how we would say it back in Mississippi. I never had moved, but I do better than that now. Friends, relatives, associates, and neighbors. Friends, F-R-A-N. Friends, relatives, associates, and neighbors are a rich field for ministry. When the Jesus cast the demons out of that man in Mark chapter 5, the record, Jesus said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. Also remember that Jesus went through Samaria in John chapter record in John 4 because a woman needed to hear what he had to say. In verse 28 and 29 of that text, the woman then left her water pot, went her way into the city, and said to the men, "Come, see a man who told me all things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ?" We need to be telling our friends and our relatives and our associates and our neighbors about the Lord and trying to reach them. People in the hospital and nursing homes need a visit. If you're looking for a place to start, there are a lot of places. Luke 8:41, the Bible says, "Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at the feet of Jesus, began pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying." There are people in nursing homes and hospitals that need us to visit them. My dad, today would have been my dad's 93rd birthday if he'd lived. And my dad was never sick really a day in his life until he was diagnosed with cancer. And then he had to take chemo, rounds of chemo, and he'd have to go to the hospital, and he had to stay for a couple of days. He never wanted to go to the hospital and visit anybody prior to that. He said, I just don't do that. I don't go to the hospitals. But then as the disease began to take its course in him, he had to stay longer in the hospitals. And I didn't live close to him, real close to him. And so when I get to go see him, I'd go to the hospital. He's there. And he told me one day, he said, "Son, you know the loneliest thing up here?" I said, "What?" He said, "It's the back of that door not opening." He said, "Man, I am so sorry that I lived my life that way and left people in the hospital when I could have gone to see them." But if we go to the hospital, we pass on some advice and practical things that Brother Whitaker taught us a long time ago. If we go into the hospital and we know the person and we go by and the person says to us, "Here, have a seat." Never, do not ever say, "I don't have time to sit down." Ever. Because the first thing that comes to that person's mind is, "Why'd you come by in the first place? You didn't have time." Now, you may not have 5 minutes. You may not have but 10 minutes. But I'll guarantee you, if you sit down for those 5 minutes, it'll seem like a lot longer than 5 minutes to that person that's in the bed. Don't ever say, "I don't have time," because they're going to say, "Well, you should have just kept going. You shouldn't have come by here to start with." Because he thinks we only drop by for appearance. We check that off our list. You know, maybe we had 5 visits to make that day. Maybe we had to be somewhere else. And we didn't have long. But we used what we had the best we could. And we sat down and showed him that, or her, that that person was important. If you go...
Not you.
Okay. Yeah. If you go... In the elders class, I asked Joe, I said, "How much time I got left?" He said, "You just got through." And I had about 20 more points. So I see a clock here. I'm just making sure. If you're a male and you're going by yourself to visit a female, be sure that you knock on that door before you go in the room. I mean, because sometimes they'll say, "Come on in." And they won't be in a clothing mode for you to come on in. If Kathy and I go together and there's a woman, I send her in first, you know. So just think about those things. We can go door to door. We can visit the guests and the inactive members and the friends we have and relatives and associates and neighbors. We can visit those in the hospital and nursing home. We can go door to door. They did it in the first century. It's probably not the most effective way, but it is a way. I mean, there have been people converted. We had a door knocking in Nesbitt years ago, and we knocked on the door of a man by the name of Mickey Anderson. Mickey was he didn't have a lot of formal education. He was a person who loved the Lord, but he had been taught incorrectly. He was living with a woman that wasn't his wife, and we just knocked on his door. Set a Bible study up with him, talked to him about that. He found out that he was lost. Found out that he was living in sin with that woman. He wanted to get married. He wanted to be baptized. Well, I said, "Well, you got some repenting to do first." So they separated. He moved to his daughter's house, and they got a wedding license. They came back on like a Tuesday night in their sweatpants, and it was just me and Kathy and them. We did the ceremony. And he's still faithful today, not because of me, but because somebody knocked on his door. We have another lady in the congregation that died up there who... Chuck Webster knocked on her door on a door knocking campaign with the school. He set the first study up. We followed up, baptized her. She died as a Christian. Her daughter was baptized. She died as a Christian. Door knocking can be, but again, we live in sort of a different world today. We have to be careful. I wouldn't suggest going by yourself. Go in, and the Lord sent them out two by two. So that's not the doctrinal way you have to do it, but it's probably a very wise way. So, we go to these places. So what are some things that we need to remember when we go and as we go? Number one, we certainly need to remember to pray. We need to pray. If two people are going to go, or if you're going to go by yourself, well, if two people are going to go, don't wait till you get to the house to pray in the driveway. Because if you pull up in the driveway and they open the windows and they see two guys in the car praying and you're sitting there, they may think you're contemplating how you're going to break in that house or whatever. So pray before you go. Now, if you go by yourself, you can pray as you go. But if you go with, just don't close your eyes. But if it makes them uncomfortable if you go and do that sitting out there. I ran across this fellow who wrote this. He said, "I recall a visit that was made in a few years back with a new trainee. I told him, 'All you have to do is pray and I share Christ with our prospect.' I said, well, I began to share the gospel with our prospect. My trainee, while I was doing that, my trainee dropped to his knees. He used the sofa as an altar and began to pray loudly. He said, I couldn't believe this was happening. He said, I told him later, I really meant you just sit there and pray silently. You know, just when you go, pray, but use a little common sense, even though it's dead in most places, but common sense. When we go, Paul said in Colossians 4 and verse 5, be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Colossians 4 and verse 5. When you go and when we go visit somebody, don't park on the grass or in the flower bed. Try not to walk on the grass if there's a way to walk around the grass, if there's a path anywhere. Even if you have to go sort of what you think is out of your way and a little extra, don't walk across their grass. If it's the first time, and if you know them and you've been there before and they're members, whatever, that's one thing. If you don't know the people, and they look out the window and they see you trotting across their grass, they may have just sighted that. Well, I was a milkman. This had nothing to do with visiting, but I can tell you what happens if you assume something. We had this store that we worked and went in on the Monday morning, and the floor was, I mean, everything on the floor was gone as far as stands and on, and the floor was beautifully shined. I would go back to the milk box, and the milk box was like right here, and there was a double door that went back to the cooler, and there were tracks, and it was wet right there, and there were tracks in there. Well, I thought, well, somebody must have mopped that. So I started walking in the tracks, and a guy hollered at me to the end and said, where are you going? I said, I'm going back to the cooler. He said, well, go ahead. He said, somebody else already walked on it. So I go back in the back room, and there are all the stands and everything in back there. And while I'm back there, the manager walks in with his apron pulled down, sweat pouring down, and he didn't like us anyway, and sweat pouring in his face. And he said, you didn't see that floor wet out there? I said, yes, sir. I said, but somebody else, the boy told me to go back there because somebody else had gone already. He said, you know who that was? I knew then who it was. It was my helper. They'd been up all night stripping and waxing those floors, and William walked on the floor, so I walked on the floor. We assumed it was water. It was wax, okay? So you get to, I relate that to say this, you go to somebody's house and you decide to walk across the yard, they may have just done some work on their yard, and you may sink up to your knees in it. Now you're going to go try to teach them the gospel, and you're standing there having torn up the yard. Just use a little, think about that. Try not to block in the other vehicles. You know, you don't want to do that, in case somebody gets ready to leave, you don't have to get up and move the car. That's an interruption in the visit or the study that probably fosters. Is that going to be when I get? I mean, when I get 5 minutes after that goes in. No. Oh, man. Okay. Inside the home, when we go, Paul said, "Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man." When we get inside the home, look around and try to find something with which you can identify. Might be musical instruments hanging on the wall. Might be trophies. It might be just something. And then we're talking about people that you're meeting for the first time. Somewhere you got a conversation piece. You got a common ground that you can start off with so that you can tactfully work into why you're there and this, that, and the other. Don't take notes. Strike the don't. Take notes in your mind and write them down when you go to the car or back to the building. Don't sit there and say, now, what did you say? Don't just try to remember that. It's not good, and it's kind of rude to write it in front of them. Just think about that. When you leave the house, don't end the visit with the reason that you're leaving. You got to go. Just make them feel special enough that you designated that time for them, kind of like going to the hospital and visiting that fella. And this takes practice, and it takes a lot of learning how to do that, rather than say, well, I got to go. My kids got a ball game, or I got to go do this. That tells that person he didn't really have time. He just came back for just an appearance visit. So just think about those matters. Keep good records about that, so that the next person who goes will have an idea of what's going on. Colossians 4:9, Paul said, they will tell you everything that's happening here. He was talking about Tychicus and Onesimus. They were carrying the letter back. So when you go back, and if you fill out a visitation report, don't put on there, good visit. Because that could mean a lot of things, and then it means nothing to the next person. I will tell you a story, a true story, as we close. When we were living our first work, we had great friends, and they had a rental house next door. And George said, I'd like for you to go visit, you and Kathy go visit this family sometime. So we carried Wayne and Shelley over to their house, and we walked across the street, walked across the yard. That was George's yard, and he owned the other yard. And so went to the door, knocked on the door. And the door was open about this much right here, and there was a screen door there. And so I knocked, and this voice from the dark said, Homer? And I said, no, ma'am, it's not Homer. We're David and Kathy. We're from the 61 North Church of Christ. Oh, let me put me on some clothes. So she went and put on a few clothes. She came back to the door. She had hair about Shanna Kay's length right there. Maybe a little shorter. She said, well, actually what I did was, she said, my hair used to hang down to my waist, and I cut my hair. Homer hasn't seen it. That was her husband. He was at a meeting, and so I wanted to surprise him, and I didn't want him to be all that mad at me. So she was going to surprise him, like, okay? That's just the beginning of the story. We go in, and we sit down, and she had this mangy cat that was loose. And she had clothes all over the couches. They were going on a trip. He was a 4-H director. And she had a anyway, the bird's got the spike on his head. The bird was out of the cage. And the bird was flying around the house. And as the bird flew around the house, the cat tried to get it. And when the bird would fly across us, the cat would run across us. And every now and then, the cat would hit the bird a little bit, and feathers would go. And she said, you know, I guess one of these days, he's going to catch that bird. And I thought, not if you put him in that cage over there. So she finally did put him in the cage. And then the bird just squealed and squealed and squealed and squealed. And so Homer never, I don't think Homer ever got home. So,
I wonder why.
We left. That wasn't the end of the story. We left. So then we came back the next time, George and I did, and they had Kathy and I did, and Homer was on the telephone. I'm telling you a story for this. Be prepared for anything when you go to this. Okay? Homer was in the back room on the telephone, and she had gotten rid of the cat. She had this big old dog sitting there. And the dog came back. First thing, the dog was stretched out on the couch, and the dog wouldn't move. He wasn't going to let us sit down. And she had to pull him off the couch. And he comes, I sit down, and he puts his head on my knee and looks up at me like this. And I said, what kind of dog is it? And she said, pit bull. And so here's a pit bull that she had to drag out. So she takes him over, and she puts him in the back room, and he's clawing on the door. And Homer, she said, sometimes I have to call Homer at work and get him to talk to the dog because the dog won't mind me. So when the third visit we went back, George and I went, and he said, the dog's dead, the cat's gone, and we don't have the bird. I said, good. Just be prepared. So I started, we would send people to visit them. And they said, and so her nickname was the bird lady. And but we never converted, but we were studying with him, and she said, I'm lost then, because she was Methodist. No. And he said, yeah, your whole family's lost, because she hadn't been baptized. So he was a member of the Baptist denomination. So went and took her to the Baptist church and had the Baptist preacher baptize her, immerse her, because that's what he thought it taught. But third visit, we had a long visit. We never could. He visited our services a time or two, but we never could reach him. But just be prepared, but go, and then be prepared when you go. Thank you.